Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our lives to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We attitude. We moody, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
It sounds like. There we go. I think you can hear me. If anybody could give me a text to, you know, see if you can hear me, that would be great. For some reason, there's just some issues going on right now with my computer. I think it's because I haven't updated it in a couple days, and it just kind of popped up and froze my machine right before the show was going to start. And for whatever reason, my microphone will not, the USB, it just won't even show it. So it's kind of crazy. But yeah, like I said, if you guys can potentially show me or text me to see if, in fact, you can hear me, that would be great. That way I'm not doing another full show or a show if you can't hear me. So yeah, that's where we're at. Like I said, this has nothing to do with Blog Talk. So it's no problems there whatsoever. I just, like I said, I don't know. I really think it has something to do with that update, but as far as I can tell, as far as I could tell, you can hear me, as far as I can tell. But I don't know for a fact, and I'm having to run this long, you know, Windows update thing, and it's really, it's taking way too long, and it's slowing down everything, and yada, yada, yada. So I'm just hoping and praying that this thing, you know, works. And it's one of those updates that literally it says you can work in the background, but when I'm trying to do this, I can't even have my switchboard open right now. Like I can't even get the whole thing going. So like I said, we'll see what's going on. And I realize a lot of people hung up, so they don't really know if I'm on. They figured that I was having some problems. So, all right. So I don't really know how the sound is. Okay, I'm starting to get, looks like I'm starting to get some text. Is the sound like normal, or is it a little less, a little more, kind of just, you can hear me, but kind of shaky? Like I said, is it worth doing the show? Can you hear me enough to actually do the show? Because it looks like, you know, from my settings and everything. So I'm getting some messages saying, you sound like, oh, that I'm in the background. I got you. Okay. So, all right. It's going to be kind of an old school way. Going to be kind of an old school way tonight, kind of like, you know, when this first thing started way back before the turn of the century. No, I'm just kidding. Everybody used to call, pretty much, I shouldn't say everybody, but most people used to just call on their cells and use their phone, and it was fine. Then Blog Talk kind of got really busy, and just sound-wise, you couldn't use your phone. That's why I didn't really want to call into my phone. You know, I'll do it randomly, calling with my phone, but tonight, I just kind of wanted to figure out what was going on with my issue so far. So anyway, really, really random. I'm sorry about this, guys. This is just, if it's not one thing, it's the other, right? 2 weeks ago, we had an issue where I had to do a random show. Last week, I literally did a show just last night, and there was no problems. So if anybody has, any suggestions or whatever, like I said, it literally just won't recognize my microphone at this stage. And I've tried to hook up a couple of different old ones and new ones, and they all should work. So it's not that. It's literally it just won't register anything. And I'm just wondering if I messed it up or what. I like I said, I have no clue, man. I don't know what the hell's going on. I'm actually kind of messing with my computer as we speak, if you can hear that background noise. So anyway, we might as well just get into it, right? There's no point in beating around the bush. I really think it does have to do with this damn update that usually I'm really good at it and just automatically do it and stuff. But this one, it's like a security thing and all that. So yada, yada, yada. Anyway, we do have some things to talk about. And I can't even open up my switchboard right now. So I can't even take calls right now. And they said this update will take quite a long time. So I think it's that security update for Windows 10 is what's going on. It's like 41%, and it's been going for a while. So anyway, let's get into boxing here, though, shall we? So it's going to be a shortened show, guys. It's going to be just me. So I apologize if you're trying to listen to some other opinions tonight. Just going to be me, folks. Just going to be me. Anyway, the show will start with recap from most of it will be from that Showtime triple header. Great, great show there. Obviously, the main event turned out basically how we thought, and that's not a good thing, right? That's not a good thing. Although I will have to say, it's not that bad of a thing the way they lined up the three fights. You know, a lot of us were complaining, rightfully so, that maybe, you know, Charlo Lubin should be the main event attraction. Everyone was pumped up for that one the most. So yeah, why wouldn't that be the best? But, you know, KH called in last week and he made a great point of saying, well, you know, the way they got it, the first two fights are the most intriguing. And then if Lara does spoil things, the Lara Gouchet fight, then you can just walk out. And that's exactly what it was, rather than buzz killing right before a main event. And you never know, maybe some casuals would have walked out going, well, I don't even really know Lubin or Charlo anyway, so screw it. So we are going to start with that. We're going to look at the World Boxing Super Series with Groves, preview some fights there. His next fight, Groves Eubank Jr., which is a really fun fight. Man, you start looking at these semifinals, and it's exciting, especially the fact that they're going to be, you know, in the first quarter for sure. There's no messing around. We already know that it's going to happen. We'll talk a little bit about the PBC on Fox and a couple other things. We will talk about the fights coming up this weekend. There's another installment of the quarterfinals, the second to last one, if I'm not mistaken. Murat Gassiev is going to hit the ring and try to win a fight to get him into the semifinals. So we'll preview some of the stuff going on this weekend as well. And then news, obviously, since last Wednesday, Pulev got hurt. Now Anthony Joshua has a replacement. We now know for a fact that Errol Spence is fighting Lamont Peterson. It's either going to be January 13th or January 20th. And some other fight news we'll get around to as well. But just, I mean, right off the bat, Jermell Charlo and Erickson Lubin. Let's get right into that, shall we? Now, considering the competition, we all know the fall is a rough time to go head up against college football and just have an NBA actually starting a couple weeks earlier than it normally does. They're trying to have a little less, you know, three games or four games and six nights type of thing. But just a lot of competition in the fall and early winter, you know. NFL may not be on Saturdays, but then again, it's still being talked about. It's still distracting people, just fantasy alone, right? So the rating did a pretty good rating, you know, both the opening fight and the second fight, the co-feature, peaked over 500,000. And, you know, when you look at the Showtime ratings, Espinoza talked about this a while back. Even though HBO now, you're starting to be able to live stream it more in certain areas, right? You know, if you have HBO Go, it was always sucked for fighting or for fights because you had to wait until they were done showing them on HBO. A lot of times that's like, what, Tuesday or Wednesday? So, whereas, you know, Showtime, the app that they've had for a while, a lot of people stream on their phone, and I know plenty of people that have done that. And that's been, they've been on the cutting edge of that, not just with that, but showing the undercard sometimes on Showtime Extreme, or like a lot of promoters, putting it on Facebook or Twitter or something like that. That's always a good look. And also Hulu Plus, they've streamed Showtime fights for quite some time. So there are some boxing fans that either use the app or do the Hulu Plus stream. So you can't always look at just those ratings like that's it. You know what I mean? But anyway, they both did pretty good ratings. Anytime they peak over 500,000 or 600,000 for Showtime, that's actually pretty decent if you look at the average number. You know, you can't really take a ton out of this Jermell Charlo and Erickson Lubin fight. You can't take a ton out of it because not a lot happened, right? And but what did happen was shocking considering how early it happened. You know, Lubin did manage to land a few jabs. He actually was pretty responsible early on. There was a nice right-hand counter by Charlo before the knockout. Really nice clean shot. And there was a moment, and he did it a couple of times, Lubin did. He ducked the jab. Sometimes it was a double jab from Charlo. And he would duck, and he ducked down to his left, Charlo's right. And we all know the right hand is what knocked him out. So he basically ducked down after, I think it was a double jab, and by Charlo. Lubin ducks down to his left and just gets caught with the short right hand, uppercut, hook, whatever you want to talk about. It was just short, and he stepped right in to the realm of that right hand. And not only, you know, so when people say it was a lucky punch, I say yes and no. You know, the fact that the timing was there, the fact that he was just ready to throw, and the fact that he was kind of, you know, he had seen Charlo do that a couple of times off of it, you know, ducking his jab. So I think it was definitely skill that set it up, but the actual pinpoint target of where it landed, I think, is a little lucky. You can't really tell me that Charlo was like, I'm going to hit his ear right now, especially in that moment. It's one thing if the guy's head's right up and you just hit somebody in the side of the head or in the ear. That's a little easier to do, but when they're ducking, you know, that's, I mean, let's be honest, that's where a lot of times side of the head or top of the head, that type of stuff happens as well. And so he timed it with skill and adapting to what he's seeing in front of him. But the actual landing spot was a little lucky because he landed it. Not a lot of people have talked about this. But if you look, and it's hard because they didn't really have that many good replays when you're looking at it to actually see the actual punch, but it's near the end of the several replays they show, and you can see him hit him right on his ear, Now, I'm not saying, oh, it was a legal shot. I'm not saying that. But that has even more effect, because actually, technically, it really didn't land on his chin or his temple. It looked like it landed right on the side of the head ear area. And to me, it looked like he landed right on the ear. Either way, Lubin, try as he may, tried to get up. Couldn't even come near getting up. Tried. He was just glued, stuck like glue to the canvas. And that's it. Charlo gets the job done. Another highlight reel knockout. His second one this year. And it was at the Barclays. His last one, which actually was not lucky either. It was just a great, perfect setup shop. He did set up shop. He's setting up shop in Brooklyn right now. So Charlo seems to be sitting down on his punches more, as we know. We knew that coming in. We also know that he's going for it a little bit more, too, not just content on outboxing somebody, but setting people up with good shots, him and his brother. And so say what you want about Lubin. I think Badu Jack is a great example of a guy getting knocked out early in a fight. Side of the head, I believe in that one too. Or top of the head, I can't remember. But he came back, and look where he's at now, man. He really, to me, was the best 168-pounder. And now is at 175 and looking for some other fights there. So it's not all over for Erickson Lubin. I know a lot of people are excited about this fight, but most people I talked to favored Charlo. I did as well, but I thought it would actually go much deeper. I favored a decision, actually. I just thought that he would get a good start, Charlo would, and it'd be good two-way fight. But then I thought down on the scorecards, I thought Lubin would get a little desperate and show some of the flaws that he's shown on the way up, getting wide with his punches and whatnot, missing bombs instead of setting them up type of thing. So it's kind of funny, though, because when a young guy takes the risk, then he gets a lot of crap for it, you know? So he could come back and have a really solid career. We really won't know. Maybe he is chinny. You know, we really don't know for a fact anyway. I mean, it was a great shot, lucky or not, whatever you want to call it. But I'm not going to sit there and, you know, we were all anticipating it, though, guys. Remember, we all, most of it, I don't really know of too many, unless you're just an Arislandi Lara just fanboy. Most people were wondering why this wasn't the main event. So if we're here wondering, most of us, the vast majority of fans and media members are like, this should have been the main event. Well, then it was a legit fight then, wasn't it? It must have been a legit fight if this was the one fight that stood out to us. Now, we all were, you know, the Hurd-Trout fight was really interesting too. And obviously it played out to be the best fight. But we were all saying that's the main event. That's the big one. So let's not all of a sudden tear Lubin down too much beyond some critical factual stuff. You know what I mean? So to me, it's kind of mixed. I'm in between because I said, yeah, we all knew he was jumping up in competition, probably too high, and that's why he was going to lose. But to say at the end, yep, see, I told you, he shouldn't have even been in this fight. Well, why'd you want to watch the fight so bad if one guy shouldn't have even been in the fight? You see what I'm saying? And this is where that professional boxing Twitter, professional matchmaking comes in, and professional promoter and professional management and everybody, you know, and TV executive. Seems like everybody is is an expert now on Twitter and YouTube and whatnot, and in the media for that matter. Yes, it was too far of a step up. When I saw him in the ring, though, throwing punches, it didn't seem like he was completely lost or anything like that. But, mentally, sometimes it is tough to come back from that. But either way, after the fight, Charlo's brother and I believe his trainer as well got hit in the head with a chair. Now, some people say it came from the Lubin camp. There was also some issues in the back with the Jared Hurd camp. You know, the Charlos are just making a name for themselves, and I think that some of the angst and some of the anger and some of the just bitterness that you hear and see from them, some of it I think is pretty legit on their side. Other times, not so much. You know, if you look at these two guys that the both brothers fought recently, you know, Lubin, his side was talking a whole mess of stuff, and so was he, Lubin. And obviously, so was J-Rock. J-Rock was talking about a whole bunch of stuff on Jermall Charlo. And so a lot of them were like more like, you know, some people are okay with a little static after fights too, because it's like, well, dude, you talked a bunch of crap and now you just got knocked out. So sorry, but I'm still like going to talk trash to you. Look at Terrence Crawford. He's the same way. Did you get what you're looking for after he just knocked someone silly? Because of why? Because of the lead up. So some people can just talk trash and it doesn't bug them. It did feel like Jermell was a little bit more hyped than normal, like in the lead up. So it kind of made me feel like, man, is Lubin actually kind of getting to him a little bit? We'll see. And of course, that wasn't the case. He was getting to him, but not to the point where he'd lose focus. And that's the key, obviously. So I'm big on hugging it out. You know, and they did hug it out a little bit. But then again, why wouldn't you be mad if someone just got hit in the head with a chair? You see what I'm saying? So I'm kind of in between on this one, too. You know, like I was talking about the punch, some people calling it lucky, some people calling it skill, some people calling it no chin on Lubin. I'm kind of in between, just like I was on that. I'm kind of in between on this one because maybe they're just going all the way with it. Maybe they are just dicks. I don't know. I have no clue. I don't know these guys, really. I mean, we've had them on the show before years ago. But I don't know. That's their personality. But I will say this. They did get a lot of trash talk their way. And I talked about it last week. I've talked about it before. Because, you know, the Al Haymon fighter, it's kind of strange now because they're actually, there's this hate. But there are also a lot of people watching the fights, though, with that hate. And that's what the Charlo brothers are developing. They're developing people that like shit talkers. They're developing that fan base and the people that hate them. They're developing that one, too. Everyone's got an opinion on them. But let's be honest. Let's call a spade a spade. They got trashed on the way up. Even Jermell got trashed, and he was fighting better opponents than his brother was, you know, for quite some time. And a lot of it has to do with just a Haymon fighter. And, oh, they got the easy route or this, that, and the other. And don't get me wrong. I think Jermall, it took them a while to. But, hey, it worked. It developed them. It did take them a while to get a challenge, unlike Jermall, right? But Jermall seemed like he could box. He has more of an open game plan, right? He has a couple of different game plans. So that's probably why they were able to challenge him earlier. But the Charlo sisters, I mean, they got called all sorts of names and just got shitted on. And it is true. They should have been looked at a little, maybe not just so judgmental. They should have just gotten a fair shake. And I think that's what it's all about. Whether you're pro Haymon and that's it, and you're not giving other fighters from other companies fair shakes, or you're anti-Haymon and not giving his fights and fighters fair shakes, I think they just needed a fair shake. I think that's what it was. And, you know, whatever they're doing, they're fucking doing it. It's working, dude. Whatever this is, if they're really pissed off because they felt like they were ignored for a couple years, or at least the last year, year and a half, they were, man. It's not just ignored, but trashed. Like they're just nothing. Like they're not going to be good at all. And look at them now. Look at him now, right now. It's kind of interesting. Anyway, you know, there was a decent storm later that night, and I have satellite TV, and luckily for me, the main event, the recording was all choppy and mixed up. And you know how you, if you have satellite TV and it gets mixed up, which surprisingly doesn't happen that much. But, yeah, so I missed a good chunk of that Lara fight. But what I, from what I understand, I didn't really miss a whole lot of that fight. So I'm actually kind of happy I didn't have to put up with it all. I mean, I watched a chunk of it, you know what I mean? But I don't know. It's kind of funny. But the first fight, that was a fun-ass fight. Really fun fight, man. It turned out to be that the fight of the night. It really did. It turned out to be the fight of the night. Jared Herd versus Austin Trout. And Herd did it again, man. Herd did it again. He was down. I'm not going to say down and out, obviously. But he was down. He was down. He was not, it wasn't looking good. Not down on the canvas, like I mentioned, but I didn't give him a round until, I didn't give him a round until the sixth round, actually, now that I look at it. I just thought Trout in the first round, just busier, a couple clean shots. Trout got his jab going in the second round. Also had a couple of moments where he had Herd on the ropes. Not any kind of major, huge, huge blows, but he had him there. Pumping the jab a little bit more, putting hooks to the body, and he started throwing the uppercut as well. Now, this was a little bit closer of around the third round because Herd had some moments early and late. He did rally a little bit. He showed a little life because for a second it was like, whoa, dude. Then in the fourth round, Trout started countering. He'd either counter with the left hand or just land the straight left hand. I also landed a huge uppercut in that fourth round. And at that point, I'm thinking, wow, because we saw this with Harrison. But Harrison was just outboxing him. Whereas Trout was outclassing him. And some of these punches were landing really, really hard. And Herd was just following. He did catch him with a nice right hand, even in that fifth round. But it just wasn't enough, and Trout was still busy. But that sixth round, first of all, was a great round. And there was a lot of like 20, 30-second moments in a chunk of these rounds that were just fun. And Trout was dominating, or at least controlling, that sixth round, but he got Herd late. And I felt like that's what stole the round. Now, maybe you could say 10-10 or something like that, but I gave Herd the sixth. And then it was Herd from there on. And it seemed like when he got Herd, to me, when he got Herd, his whole demeanor changed. And, of course, we see that, but it was more of a deep feeling. The whole, not demeanor, but his facial expression, just everything about him. It's like he had been taken down a notch. And it's almost like he had been subdued. If you go back and look at his body and his face and what that's telling you, he was done because he got Herd pretty early in the seventh round again with right hands and left hooks. Now, Trout did manage to rally, I'd say, I think midway through the seventh some. There was a head clash, too, and the left eye of Trout started bleeding pretty bad. That sixth round, though, I forgot to tell you, 34 to 30. A lot of punches thrown in that sixth round. Herd landed the 34. Eighth round, now Herd was starting to use his jab more. And he got hit a lot, but he did once in a while move his head. He still showed that kind of stuck in cement, wide stance, gets stuck after throwing a punch, falls forward too much. You know, his technique, he didn't have a long, long amateur career, and he's kind of just learned on the job as a pro. But, you know, guy came about three or four fights against Galarza. He came out of nowhere, basically. And then he got a good look last year, too, against, who was it, Molina, I think. And there were some really huge right hands I heard in that eighth round. But it's not like, I did kind of feel like Trout, kind of got his last gasp in this one because he bounced back a little bit. But then the ninth round, pretty early on, I literally put it in my notes. He looked damaged again. The last few rounds there, he looked damaged. Just when he was back in the corner, he looked bad. Was barely paying attention to his corner, and he just looked kind of dead on his stool to me. And his right eye, by the ninth round, the right eye was swelling really, really bad. And after the 10th round, he couldn't actually walk back to his corner correctly. There were some really late hard combinations. In that round. And like I said, he was just hurt, man. He came back to the corner. And actually, a lot of people think that the ref, or not the ref, but the doctor stopped it, and that's what the ref went off of. And I could see why, but it was actually, and I think, I want to say on Ringside Reporter, I want to say Beep said this too, and he was right. The corner said, I'm going to stop this, because he had just got done there kind of, you know, like he's trying to motivate his fighter. And he's trying to say to him some things, right? And Trout was just dead. No life in him, in my opinion. And that's why I'm glad he went to the hospital after this fight as well, because he needed to go just to make sure, and I hope everything's fine. Sounds like he is, but. And it was actually the trainer that said, I'm going to stop this thing. And I don't know if the ref, he heard it, but I don't know if he thought, okay, now wait a second. Are we talking, did the doctor say that or whatever? And he kind of checked on the doctor. And the doctor pointed at the trainer going, well, he's saying it's over. So it, actually, to me, it didn't seem like the doctor did it. I just think it appeared that he was, if I were the doctor, I would have stopped it. But just from, like I mentioned, what Trout was telling us, non-verbally. So either way, though, Trout fought hard. But like I said, after that sixth round, he just didn't look the same. And kudos to Hurd. Like I said, you could talk about his technique. You talk about his stance. You talk about how he's following people too much. Obviously, got a pretty damn good chin. The guy takes some shots, but he just keeps coming and coming. And it is much like Jason, right? The horror movie, man. He just keeps coming. And he's not the fastest dude, hand speed or foot speed. But he gets the job done, dude, and he's fun to watch. And he's fun on social media, too. He's talking about, have you ever seen a trout drown and things like that after the fight? God bless Trout, though. I'm glad he's okay. I really hope he's okay as far as the next, handful of weeks, too, because sometimes that stuff can stay with you. But Jared Hurd, man, kudos to you, because like I said, after five rounds, I thought, man, this dude's starting to get fucked up now. Like, he's starting to get hurt. He's starting to get hit with some big shots. And he made it through it, no problem, man. And he got over the hump. It was pretty damn fun to watch, man. And obviously now Jared Hurd and Jermell Charlo makes a lot of sense for 2018. And if it's not next, I did hear Hurd has a mandatory. Someone told me that. Can't remember who it was, though. I don't know if it's been called or what. I'm sure we'll get some news on that soon. But Jared Hurd and actually Charlo did call him out. That's who I want. And whether it's next or the one after, within two fights, I really feel like, because both of these guys just challenged themselves, maybe the Trout brothers, now that he didn't get much work in either, his other brothers, Jermell and Jamal, in their last couple fights, maybe they will have a homecoming fight where they're both on the card in Houston, and then maybe come back to the Barclays. I just feel like in the summer, and have this fight, whatever. I'm cool with whatever. It needs to happen in 2018, though, that's for sure. But I think the Barclays Center makes a lot of sense. The Barclays Center makes a ton of sense, man. Makes a ton of sense to me, anyway. Because think about it. last year, 2016, Hurd put on a pretty good display against Molina, right? It was a fun fight. He won the fight. You know, I thought that was a nice display, and it was in front of a big crowd, obviously, right? Because he was on the undercard of Thurman Porter. So this is like summer 2016. So he put on a good performance there, right? And then he backs it up with a great comeback performance. And, you know, he was on a card that did pretty good ratings-wise on Fox not long ago either, technically speaking, right? So so that, you know, he kept that going anyway as far as the viewing public. And then now in the Barclays again, he comes back in a great fight. You know, one of the better fights of the year. I'm not going to put it top 10 or anything like that, but it was a good fight, very good fight. So back-to-back years, you put on really good performances at the Barclays. You're ready. And then now if you look at it, Charlo has knocked back-to-back people out at the Barclays. Because remember, his last one scored a highlight reel knockout, right? And that was in like April. And then obviously we saw, you know, people were obviously really excited about this one. So we got to see, you know, we got to see him do it again. So now, and that was in front of like, I don't know, give or take 8,000 or 9,000 people. This one was in front of like 7,500. To me, word of mouth, you know, spreads, and they're going to be like, this Charlo dude is knocking people the F out, dude. I like this Charlo dude. You know what I mean? And then Hurd was there too, so it makes sense, much the way they put Porter and Thurman in bouts before there, and they mashed them together. It drew a big crowd. Now, I'm not saying those guys aren't as big as, you know, Thurman and Porter. They're not as big as these, you know, Hurd and you know, Charlo are still developing that way, name-wise, but why not make that the main event? It's a unification fight. Put it in Barclays. Nobody has that huge advantage then. And that crowd, no matter what you think of the Charlos, that crowd, a good chunk of it laughed. They laughed when he said, when they asked Jermell, the guy who actually got hit in the head with the freaking chair. And this ain't no WWE chair. This is a real chair. And he said, yeah, I'm okay. Is you okay? Is he okay? Like saying that's a little bit of the crowd. Just it was mean, but it was funny as hell, you know? And so, and that's why it's a perfect mixture there. I think they got to do it 2018. Like I said, maybe the Charlos now in March or April come back and they fight, or, in, you know, whenever, February, March, whatever, they fight in Houston and then they have a summer card where Charlo and Hurd are in Brooklyn. That'd be great. That worked for me. That's fine. I don't mind that. I do think the Charlos deserve a Houston homecoming now, you know, where they're both on the card. And like I mentioned, you know, they both should be ready to fight. I'm sure Jermall is a little ahead of his brother as far as getting ready for a fight because they fought, you know, with gaps in between there, so. Either way, though, that's the fight, man. To me, that's the fight right there. I think they got to get that done. So, you know, Lara, whatever, he won. We'll see what he does next. I don't really care. I mean, I care if he fights someone good, but if it's on this role he's been on, then I don't care, you know, obviously. But either way, it turned out good that the main event, that people didn't walk out before Charlo and Lubin, you know, had that been the co-feature, you know what I mean? So, whatever. It sucks but that people were leaving during the main event, but it's not the first time that it's happened, by the way. I know a lot of people made a big deal, but that's happened plenty. It used to happen in Chicago for Spilka. It happened with Shawnee before, too. Shit, it just happened in that Figueroa-Guerrero fight. So, it happens from time to time, and Lara is a perfect fighter to make that happen. Now, Leo Santa Cruz and Mahrez, as we know, fought in some stay busy fights, and they turned out basically how I thought they would. We know Chris Avalos is just a hard-nosed fighter. And if you're going to stay busy, I like the TV-style fight to stay busy, personally, you know. And some fighters and some networks or promotional outfits or Al Haymon, PBC, is, you know, sometimes top-ranked fighters are able to fight a stay-busy fight as long as it's like a good stylistic fight and it's a good brawl. So they at least it's entertaining. You know, I think that's kind of the key when it comes to staying busy. You got to at least go in there with a tough dude. Even though he may get knocked out or whatever, you still got to get in there so it's entertaining. So it has some sort of, not meaning per se, but some sort of entertainment value. You know what I mean? And I think that they, that Gutierrez really stood up to a lot of shots too. And he actually at times did, he did all right. You know what I mean? I think I only gave him the fourth round. And that was probably the best two-way round. I think that was his best. I just thought he landed bigger shots, but that's about it. I don't think I gave him another round. I don't think so. But to me, Marez just looked good, man. He looked like he was still fighting smart, but throwing hard combinations. So he kept that work rate, but it was like responsible. And he put in that little subtle movement and whatnot. So, and by the way, I got a text from 503. And 503 said, you know, the size, the middleweight size. And I did hear some boxing Twitter people saying, oh, he should be a 168-pounder. Man, are you serious? Wow. So Hurd should be a super middleweight when he can make the weight at 54. But, yeah, he is much bigger. Because it's not like Trout's a small 154-pounder. You know what I mean? No, he is. That's a good call, Portland. 503 mentioned that. Like I said, I can't even open my stuff right now. So, otherwise, I would put you in here. But and it's not – I don't have my normal setup. So, I can't even, like, put you through on my phone, per se. Unfortunately, but he is right. Hurd does have that size advantage too. And that goes a long way, power and being able to take damage too. And it's just that mentally thing where you're just like, this dude's big and he just keeps coming at me, you know, like somebody get Jason Voorhees off of me. But anyway, I thought Mars looked good. And if this was all a setup, now what does suck is, is the first fight, right? You saw actually Eddie Ramirez. I actually wanted to see Eddie Ramirez against DeMarco. I think he's a good guy to test a young fighter. And sure enough, he obviously tested him pretty quick. From the start, though, there was Ramirez was aggressive, right? But DeMarco caught him, I'd say midway through that first round. And he caught him with a really, really good shot. Ramirez's legs were a tad wobbly. I had him on the rope, a couple of really good shots. So he was wobbly, and he was hurt. That's where the hobbly came in. I was going to say hurt after. So the hobbly. So he was hobbly. That's a new word, hurt and wobbly. But he shouldn't have been stopped that early. I think they should have let it go. Definitely an early stoppage there. I didn't have a problem with the other stoppages, though. Beyond, like, the actual timing, whereas Avalos, probably during the combination, you could have stopped it rather than letting combinations go and then stop it, you know what I mean? But let's be honest. In that, I think it was the eighth round, you know, Avalos took double-digit right hands before he got stopped. You know what I mean? And he was taking a lot. But sometimes it's that feeling of while you're actually getting hit, and the ref comes in and be like, all right, it's over, rather than see him survive and then, oh, we're just going to call it, or give him that last round or whatever. But in the end, it really didn't matter, right? But Avalos came to fight, though. And I know a lot of people weren't excited about this card. Notice how we really didn't talk about it, you know, last week much either. It was a bell ringer. When the bell rings, I'll watch it. But I did like, if you're going to stay busy, at least stay busy against entertaining guys that are tough. And Avalos gets knocked out. And same with Gutierrez. But Avalos, the punch count, you could tell these guys after eight rounds, not eight full rounds, 281 to 169. So Avalos did land 169 punches, threw 75 compared to 692. The percentage is where it was at for Leo, though, 41 to 23% wise. Santa Cruz just, you know, he kind of went back to his old form and just tried to, you know, he was missing early, but then he was able to finally land that right hand a little bit later. There was moments where these guys are going toe-to-toe in both fights, actually. But Mares, to me, you know, he looked good. And I think a lot of people were even further down on this card because they felt like, well, we're not really that anticipating the rematch, so I don't really want to be put, you know, to I have to watch a card to get to a card that I don't necessarily, you know, I know the outcome. And I can understand that point. I mean, but we can't just go, we know the outcome, because we know the outcome in a lot of fights, right? So that can't be the sole excuse. Now, to be fair, though, they did fight. So we do actually know the outcome from the first. But to me, this is what my thought process was after their first fight. We're talking about Leo Santa Cruz and Abner Mares, right? So this was August 2015. Now, after that fight was done, I was like, if they do a rematch at some point, I don't need it for a while, right? And so I'd be frustrated about this rematch if one of them looked like crap the last year and a half, 2 years, and then they're like, well, this is just like a money fight or whatever. And obviously that, in this sense, it wouldn't make sense because featherweights don't draw the huge crowds all the time like that, where this could be just a money fight. Like one more fight, Canelo Cotto. Well, I think Canelo beats him, especially at middleweight, but, you know, we've already seen the fight, you know, that type of thing. So for me, I was like, if they do the rematch, I want them to put it off and come back to it at another time. So personally, if they do it in March or April, sounds like they're trying to get the Staples Center again. They did draw, like, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the attendance is like 12 or 13,000 for featherweights. I mean, there hasn't been many fights in Staples Center in general, but when is the last time a featherweight fight drew, you know, that kind of numbers? So, and not only that, but I think if you go back and watch the fight, it was entertaining. It was very entertaining. It's just Leo Santa Cruz won clearly. That's all. So a lot of people complaining and bitching about the second one. The reason why I won't complain about having a rematch is, one, because they didn't go right back to it. I would have complained the right back to rematch. But there's a couple reasons why you're not getting complaints out of me. Whenever you get two legitimate fighters to fight each other, I'm not going to complain about it. You know, I've followed the sport too long, especially in the last, like, 10 to 12 years, the theme that had been prevalent in boxing. And just like style matchup, sometimes the style matchup doesn't really intrigue me, but the closeness of the matchup, the 50-50-ness, like, for example, some people were really anticipating DeGale against Andre Durrell. Durrell and DeGale. Now, some people thought, you know what? They'll land some big bombs here and there, but it's going to be a boring fight. Style-wise, it just doesn't, you know, it's not going to be good. And now I thought it actually was a lot more action-packed, you know, than I thought it would be on paper, too. But the fact that it was close on paper, that's what I'm all about, too. It's not just style with me. So to me, when you get two quality fighters in the ring, I can't really complain. I've seen too many shit mismatches over the years that, and I don't think it's a mismatch, to be honest with you. Now, another thing why I'm glad that they did the rematch later is because you want to see what fighters are going to do. And Abner Mares is not 27 years old. You know, he's not 25 and in his prime, but he's adapting his style more. The skills he's using now were always there. He just chose to just, you know, storm troop. I mean, he just chose to come forward and go to the body or below. That's what he used to do. And it worked really well at 118 and 122. But then when he started the featherweight, you know, if you look at the Ponce de Leon fight, I think that's one of his best performances of his career because it was a mixture of everything. He had the power, he had the clean and the speed and all that, going to the body and all that. But he was very smart and used this subtle movement and set things up and landed flashy combinations, hard combinations, and then took a step to the side or whatnot. You know what I mean? So I think that the improvement that Abner's made, and it's not so much this huge improvement. Like I said, I think these skills were there. He's just fighting a different style. And obviously him and, you know, Robert Garcia, they get together pretty well. And they've gotten to train so long, too, together now, too. Even though they haven't had a ton of fights, they've had a lot of training. And a lot of people thought that Marez, and he just looks fresher now, too, and maybe some of that time off, staying in the gym but staying out of wars, made him a little fresher. That's what I think. And especially when you're a veteran, you're later in your career, and you're looking like, I got one more nice little run. And that's what I feel like Marez is doing right now. So for a guy that can use a different style, because remember, in the first fight with Santa Cruz, what did he do? He stormtrooped. He literally just ransacked. And what? It worked for about 2.5 rounds. It really did. You had Leo looking at the ref, Leo looking kind of shaky, like, oh, I don't know, dude. This rust stuff is kind of shaking up Leo. But then Leo got on his jab, started using his length a little bit, and we saw something out of Leo that night we hadn't seen. And I think he put it all the way towards the second fight earlier this year where he really showed everything he had against Carl Frampton in that rematch. And there, by the way, there were some people that were saying the same thing about that Santa Cruz-Frampton rematch. All right, Frampton's going to outbox him. Why do we even need this second one? So to me, and it was a tighter fight, though. I'll say that. The Frampton-Santa Cruz was tighter, I thought, than Santa Cruz Norris. But like I said, if he uses a different style, it could work out for him. Now the length might just be a problem if Leo, in fact, you know, fights the way he can. But if you can put butts in the seats in a nice venue in LA, go back and watch the first fight, guys. It was a fun fight to watch. No matter if you thought Leo won 10 out of 12 rounds, it still was fun to watch. So I, for one, am not as pissed off or calling it a worthless fight. To me, I just don't think it's pointless. I hear the word pointless. That is a pointless fight. I disagree, man. I disagree. You got two top, what, 4, 5, 6 featherweights fighting? And it'll be well over 2 years since they have. And Marez actually looked like he did something different in the fights. And so to me, I'm not sitting there saying I'm just anticipating like it's going to be the fight of the year. But nobody's going to go home pissed off that they saw the fight. That you could almost guarantee that. Now, sure, someone could get hurt, break their hand really bad, and maybe not be as effective. And maybe Leo just jabs way more than he normally does or whatever. And plays a little safer because he's injured or something like that. Sure, that could happen. But like I said, go back and watch chunks of that fight, dude. It was a fun fight to watch. I think it's a crowd pleaser. The casuals will like it. That actually got a pretty good rating considering the competition, too. So, yeah, I'm not as down on the rematch as other people. I just have a different look at it. You know, I don't think that anytime you can have two top five guys in a weight class fighting and it's going to draw a crowd and it's going to be good for boxing in a sense, you know, both those guys can draw crowds when they're matched right, you know, for featherweights, obviously, you know. So that's my take on it. George Groves, you know, nice body shot. He was kind of – he got hit somewhat, but he also was setting up shots and countering pretty well, I thought. Took out Cox, what was it, fifth round, fourth round? Nice body shot, though. Now, George Groves moves on to the semifinals, which is in January or February, more likely in the UK, I'd assume. George Groves versus Chris Eubank Jr. And this is a hell of a matchup, man. A hell of a matchup. And this is where all this negativity about the World Boxing Super Series from America and really the super middleweight wasn't as obviously as deep as, you know, having all the belts in like the cruiserweight. But, you know, Gale had other options. Well, he was hurt. People had other options, too. Ramirez has other options. He's on ESPN now. Benavidez wanted to, you know, try to get a belt came his way. He said, screw it, I'm going to take the belt and be the youngest super middleweight ever. Yada, yada, yada. Right? So, look at what this tournament's doing, though. Look at what it's already giving us for next year. This has nothing to do with HBO, nothing to do with Showtime, nothing to do with Sky Sports, nothing. Look at what we're getting in the first quarter based off of the tournament. We get Groves Eubank Jr. We get Bredis Usyk. We're probably going to get Dorticos, who's a power puncher with skill, going against the same type of guy almost in Gassiev, as long as he gets by his fight. So you're looking at three out of the four quarterfinals are pretty damn awesome fights. And that's all Monday. That's all January and February. That's just the first quarter of the damn fight. That has nothing to do with what other people can put on paper. You see what I'm saying? So I love it. You know, that and really the first round quarterfinals, yeah, to me, I didn't see too many matchups that were just blow you away. But it, like we mentioned, I believe last week or the week before that, it got people on schedule, though. They all got a camp. They all got a fight. Now they're basically on the same schedule, and they're going to be ready. They're going to be sharp. And literally January, February, that's four fights. And the other, I still think there's interest there. Callum Smith is waiting for the winner of Brahmer. And I just lost. He's a hometown kid, too. I don't know why I'm losing it. But anyway, I'm pumped. I am pumped, man. I'm really excited for that. So, good weekend in the sport. By the way, Ismael Barroso knocked out, or Barroso, or is it Barrio? Barrio? I can't remember. But he I think it was a six-round knockout of Fidel Maldonado. That was a fight. That was on ESPN Deportes. I just saw a chunk of that fight. Or I saw that fight. I didn't see the other fights, I should say, because I don't have ESPN Deportes. So that about wraps up the recap. Either way, I will be back, you know, next week with a normal, you know, whatever the issue is tonight, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to figure it out. I really hope it's not what I think it is. But anyway, as far as this weekend goes, HBO has some fights. Now, none of them stand way out. Machado against Corrales is an interesting 130-pound fight. Andre gets back in the ring against Fox, who's an unbeaten prospect. Also overseas, I think this one's going to be from Northern Ireland, or I think Northern Ireland. Burnett against Zaza is what they call him. Zakanyov? They call him Zaza, I believe. But that dude's a fun fighter to watch. He's the one who took it I'm kind of distracted here, kind of messing with something. All right, I'm just making sure this update is still on track here. Still making sure. Yeah, looks like it. All right, sorry, what was I saying? So there are some fights, like I mentioned, Murat Gassiev, if you have the audience channel, that's going to be on against Krzysztof Vilarczyk. He's a big cruiserweight. You know what I mean? We'll see if he can actually, you know, put up a fair amount of resistance. It would be nice to see that, because I'm always looking for a big fight like that. Why not? It'd be a nice little spot for him to perform. But we'll see if that is in fact the case. So yeah, there is some interesting fights. It's one of those weekends where you're like, all right, let's check it out. I do think that Ryan Burnett, though, and Zaza Zakayanov, I think it is, Zakayanov, he actually, Rasheen Warren is who I was trying to think of. He, it was a really good competitive fight, but he took it to Warren enough to get the job done on that, man. That was fun. So I want to see the young Burnett, and there's rumors that Burnett actually got that Ryan Burnett got dropped in sparring, which, you know, can mean absolutely nothing, and also can show some flaws, because the guy does have some flaws as a fighter. I mean, no joke. So I think Zsa Zsa will get it. I think he's got it. He may have to knock him down a couple times, though, because you never know, man. He is going to be on a waste soil, you know what I mean? So we'll see. And I think Gassiev, I don't know if he'll knock him out, but I do definitely favor him. I definitely favor Murat Gassiev. And last year, Gassiev had a great knockout. I was actually live. It was at a small casino, probably about an hour and a half out of the city. It was on Toe-to-Toe Tuesdays. And this was a title eliminator. And this was to be able to fight Lebedev, who he beat cleanly, I thought, as well. Schimmel, his first round knockout. And what's crazy is, you know, Gassiev was kind of strange, because by the end of the first round, his face was like pink from getting hit a lot. And like a lot of these, you know, or I should say, unlike a lot of these Eastern European guys who have these, have this brilliant amateur record, he doesn't. And so I was wondering, man, I picked Lebedev, actually. I think I picked Lebedev to win, just because I thought, man, Gassiev gets hit a ton. Even when he scored out a highlight reel knockout. It just seemed, like I said, I literally saw pink on his face. I was like, dude, but obviously he didn't care much. And he did sharpen up the jab and timing and everything. He did. He was kind of on his P's and Q's, dotting his I's and crossing his T's in that Lebedev fight. He really showed me a little bit more, like, okay, I see. He just kind of stepped it up. You did see that habit. We talk about that. We were wondering if Lubin would bring in some of those bad habits of just trying to knock people out. So yeah, I'd probably say that the Gassi fight will be, you know, against Velarshik. I actually think that'll be an action-packed fight. Not sure what Corrales is going to show up. His last fight didn't look that good. He's definitely beatable. Maybe Machado can do that, or Machado. But I think action-packed, I'm looking at that Ryan Burnett and Zsa Zsa. I think that'll be the funnest fight of the weekend. And like I said, I'm going with Zsa Zsa on that. I think Andre will beat Fox, but you know, I heard Andre now is going to, you know, going up the middleweight, but now I've also heard that he may try to go back and get that Lara fight. It's like, well, dude, what the hell? Which one is it? You know, are they thinking that there's more in the budget next year, so they're going to get a little raise to fight Lara or something? I don't know. And he just, what, lied to HBO saying, yeah, man, I'm part of 160 now. I'll come up, yeah, just to get the fight, which I wouldn't blame him if he did that. It's kind of smart, actually. So yeah, that about wraps it up. Oh, by the way, Gabriel Rosado and Glenn Tappy are fighting on ESPN2, and I'm against it. I don't do this much. I don't do this much because, and this is something that's unfortunately kind of common in our sport. Stylistically, it could be fun much in the way of Guerrero and Figueroa. And a lot of people kind of came up with a similar thing because Guerrero looking shot prior, and obviously it turned out pretty bad. Stylistically, fun fight, but I don't think I've seen the same. Guerrero's look bad. He usually bounces back and has good. It's kind of like hit or miss if you look at the last couple of years. Whereas Tapia's, Rosado's just older and faded, right? But where Tapia, like, gets hurt, he's gotten hurt so many times. And the last fight I was against, and it kind of sucked because he got bailed out because of the injury. Quigley had that hand injury right after the first round, and he couldn't step on the gas. But remember, Tapia, it damn near off the first shot that landed on him, was hurt really. He looked pretty bad. I was like, oh, my God, this is why they want to see him, you know? And so I'm not going to tell you to boycott it because, you know, this shit happens all the time. But I'm not too excited about Tapia going against Rosado. I'm just not. You know, I'm kind of afraid now. Luckily, Rosado's not a big puncher per se. But I also said that about Figueroa and Guerrero. I don't mind it as much because Figueroa's not a big puncher. And he sure when a shot guy gets shot, sometimes you don't need to be a big puncher. So I did want to bring that up for those who are interested, though. Tapia versus Rosado. I'm not really feeling the fight. I just think Tapia shouldn't be in the ring anymore. God bless him. You got to make a living. I'm not trying to take away anyone's living. But I'm also going to express my viewpoint and I think, you could name a couple of fighters, and I don't know how many you could name where they looked as bad as Tapia in the ring at times in the last couple of years. A Kirkland fight, what his trainer put him through in some of these fights, and he was done, spent, trashed in the corner, and his corner's like, give me some hop, basically like meaning bounce around, let's see some life. Dude, I don't have any fucking life in my body, in my soul right now. So how the fuck am I supposed to give you life and give you hop? Luckily, you know, he did get away from that dude, but there's just times, you know, I didn't think Guerrero was going to get seriously hurt against Figueroa. I just didn't. I'll be honest. You could tell his body was spent in that fight because look at how he was reacting to those uppercuts and those shots, you know. He is shot. Done. Over. But at least he was bouncing back with good performances and then a bad one, then a good one, and then an okay one. You know what I mean? At least that was the case. Whereas Tapia, like I said, I think he got off the hook because Quigley had that injury because otherwise he was hurt early. Anyway, let's move on. We only got a couple of minutes. We got a little over like 12 minutes left to show. As you know by now, Kubrat Pulev is off. He got an injury, 10 days before the fight? 2 weeks before the fight? Something like that. Carlos Takam, who's a pretty solid dude. I actually think he beat Joseph Parker. There I go again with that. Anthony Joshua, thinking it's Joshua Parker. Joseph Parker. I thought Parker got beat by Takam. So I don't mind this. And another thing is, when you got a lot of money involved in fights, it's smart to get a replacement and just have him training, pay for his his training and everything, and just have him there chilling. And that's exactly what Eddie Hearn did. He had already worked a deal with Takam. He was already getting ready to fight. And if he wasn't going to be the fill-in, the reserve, basically, he was going to, I believe, fight in Monaco. I believe he's going to fight in Monaco, so they at least he'd be able to get a fight and make some money. But obviously, he probably gets a little bit more money for coming into this one. Now, some people aren't happy about the pay-per-view, you know? A fill-in opponent on pay-per-view? What the shit is this? What is this, the UFC? they do that all the time. I hear you, but shit was good. You know, he's going to be on pay-per-view. I got news for you, UK fans. And that's from experience here in the States. Anthony Joshua is a pay-per-view fighter until he hangs him up. So just be happy you're not paying 70, 80 bucks for it rather than 20 something, you know, I guess. There's a glass half full for you, if that helps. But I think Takeham's probably just as good, to be honest. I wouldn't say that if he hadn't been training, you know what I mean? I like that dude, actually. I actually wanted to see him against Wilder. This dude's a tough hombre. Like I mentioned earlier, we now know for a fact Errol Spence and Lamont Peterson are fighting on Showtime. It's either going to be January 13th or January 20th. We knew it was going to be January, and now we are that much closer to the official announcement as far as finalizing in the venue. They have it down to January 13th, January 20th. So this is a really, really good fight to keep him on pace to try to get Thurman. And now Thurman says he's going to be back February, March-ish, something like that. March, whatever. You know, from that injury, he's going to get a fight and then look for some other big fights. Now, Thurman was a little apprehensive to talk about Spence, but Spence is sitting right in front of him. Not talk about him like talk shit, but like talk, you know, about the fight. So, and Spence just kind of kept looking at him like, Oh, yeah, no, yeah, I got you, man. You talked about, you said about seven things, but none of them were that you wanted to fight me. No, I think he will, but I like Lamont Peterson as a good fight, to, you know, good first defense. Peterson's a solid welterweight. Good fight. Very good fight. Another fight that got made, it's official, December 16th. In Canada, I believe Montreal, HBO, on HBO, BJ Saunders defends his belt against David Lemieux. That's a good fight. I like that fight a lot. Saunders actually gets to fight somebody, and Lemieux gets another chance at a title bout. So, good fight. I actually favor Saunders in that. I know a lot of people hate him. Of course, I do got to see his body. Pause. I do have to see his body to make sure that he didn't, like, go crazy after this last win or something like that, you know what I mean? But if he stays in shape, which he should, he just fought not long ago, and now he's fighting in December, so he should be in shape. If he's in shape, I like Saunders to win that fight, but that's a good fight because Lemieux, he's never been in the ring with someone this powerful. I take that back. Andy Lee was pretty damn powerful. Andy Lee was pretty powerful, too. So that's a really good fight, though. I like that style matchup. Good fight. Very good fight. I think that's about it. I think that's about it for the show, which pretty much wraps it up. I'm going to go on BoxingScene.com and see if I'm missing any kind of news that just popped off or something like that. I don't really see much, guys. So, kind of a strange one because I'm sure even the sound is not as good because there's a lot of background. I'm basically just, I Skyped in and just as if I'm Skyping you at home. And you know how the sound could be there, but it's not like perfect. It's not like great audio or whatever. So, I don't have my normal setup. Hopefully, after this whole update gets installed and everything like that, it goes back to normal. It's kind of frustrating. If anybody has any, if this has happened to them or, you know, has my number or direct message me on Twitter or whatever, if I'm not following you, tell me to follow you or whatever and give me some pointers. But yeah, I mean, just to explain the problem, it's about 15 minutes for the show, 13 minutes for the show, something like that. And I had my headset, my mic, which is like a headphone, you know, with a mic and connected to it, right? And I plugged it in, the USB, plugged it in, and it was working just fine. In this update, I was actually just getting, like, calling into the show and all that, getting into the show. Just, you know, it's good to call before the show starts. get in there, not last second or nothing like that, because it's usually busy during the prime time on Blog Talk. So you can't call. You have to wait till 15 minutes before your show, but it's good to call early if you can, right? So I was just about to do that. I was actually setting up my YouTube because I was going to live stream the first part of the show tonight on YouTube, and this update came in, and it's Windows 10, and it's something that I probably already should have updated, and I've been putting it off the last couple days, and it just popped up on the screen, and it froze my computer to the point where I had to shut my computer down. Now, I turned my computer back on, and when I go to plug in my headset, my microphone, it won't read it. So then you go under, you know, all the sound and all that. You go under where the area, so you're supposed to be like, all right, that's where it is. Let's see if I need to tweak it. And it literally won't read it. I literally can't. It won't even show that it's plugged in. I plugged a different mic into it. It seemed like the mic was working. It turned on and all that, but it wouldn't read it. It just wouldn't read that it's there. So I don't know if something got switched off or somewhere in there. Like I said, has to do with something with this update, because I know it was like an update that it's been asking me to do the last couple of days, and I just, you know, I put it off. So maybe hopefully it's just my mistake. Either way, though, I won't be doing a show till next week, so I should be able to get, you know, what I need to get accomplished. Maybe just that the output itself is just messed up and I have to replace that. I don't know. Anyway, if you got any tips, let me know. Enjoy the fights. We'll definitely be back next Wednesday. Hope you guys have a good night. And like I said, I can't even open my switchboard right now, so I'm not going to play any outro music or anyway. That's why I can't let anybody in. So I appreciate those who did kind of stick with me tonight, and apologize about this kind of random Skype thing without the headphones and the mic, so it's a little clear. But I'm going to get out of here and hopefully get this thing solved. Anyway, enjoy the fights. We'll be back next week. Peace.